When you walk across a steel suspension bridge or when you get into your car, there is this comforting assumption of absolute unyielding solidity.
Right, you just expect it to hold.
Exactly. You look at a steel beam, and to the naked eye, it's like the ultimate symbol of uniformity. I mean, it's dense, it's quiet, and it just structurally exists.
Yeah, it forms the literal foundation of our modern world, and we trust it precisely because it feels so completely static.
But then you take that exact same piece of steel and you put it under a transmission electron microscope, and suddenly that comforting uniformity completely
Oh,
vanishes.
it's a completely different world down there.
It really is. You realize you aren't looking at a solid, quiet block of metal at all. You're looking at a frozen, chaotic battleground of shifting crystal structures.
A very violent battleground, actually.
Right. So welcome to your custom-tailored deep dive. Today, our mission is to explore a classic, highly detailed 1979 metallurgical study from Cambridge University by Padacia and Edmonds.
A hugely important paper for material science.
Yeah, and the subject is the hidden microscopic architecture of AISI 4340 steel, which is this high-strength, medium-carbon, low-alloy steel. We're decoding the martensite transformation to understand how microscopic shapes dictate the immense strength of the materials that build our world.
It's a crucial topic because, understanding the transformation is how we figure out what actually dictates the immense macroscopic strength of these materials.
Because martensite isn't something you just pour into a mold, right?
No, not at all. It's a structural phase that forms when steel is rapidly cooled or quenched. The atoms just don't have time to gently diffuse into a new pattern.
They're trapped.
Exactly. So instead, the entire crystal lattice physically shears and snaps into a new configuration almost instantly.
It's a massive structural shock. Okay, let's unpack this because right at the heart of this paper, there is a fundamental historical debate about how this specific steel actually organizes that shock.
The Great Lath Debate.
Yeah, the researchers focused on two distinct morphological variants of martensite in this 4340 steel. You've got lath martensite, which looks like a grouping of parallel slats, and plate martensite, which is lenticular.
Meaning it looks like a microscopic lens.
Right. And the debate centers squarely on those parallel slats, the lath martensite.
Historically, metallurgists would look at a grouping of these parallel laths under a microscope and just call the whole group a lath packet.
But the mystery they were trying to solve was about identifying the true fundamental building block of the transformation, right? The actual unit of transformation.
Yes. And to visualize this, it's essentially the sliced bread debate.
Oh, right, the loaf analogy. So basically, are we looking at a loaf of sliced bread where the fundamental unit is the individual slice, meaning the individual lath?
Right, and a bunch of these independent slices just happen to stack together to make a packet.
Exactly. Or is the fundamental unit the entire loaf, like the packet as a whole that just happens to have internal boundaries or slice marks running through it?
That is the exact conceptual divide. Slices grouping together, or a single loaf dividing itself up. What's fascinating here is why this distinction matters so heavily to the physics of the metal.
It's not just semantics.
No, not at all. If the individual lasts, the slices were the basic unit, they would be nucleating independently and growing cooperatively right next to each other.
In the exact same crystallographic orientation.
Yes, which implies a massive compounding mechanical problem, especially considering we just established that martensite forms via a violent physical shearing of the lattice.
So every time a unit forms, it's pushing against everything around it.
Exactly. That lattice displacement creates immense physical strain on the surrounding untransformed metal. If you have adjacent units independently growing in the exact same direction, their transformation displacements, their strains, would add up destructively.
Because they're all pushing the surrounding lattice in the exact same direction, the stress just compounds.
Precisely. The strain becomes purely additive. To give you some context, in other forms of martensite, we often see what are called twin-related plates.
Which are like mirror images.
Yeah, they form as mirror images of each other. So one plate shears the lattice to the left, and the adjacent twin plate shears it to the right. They mutually compensate for each other's strain.
Oh, that's clever. They cancel each other out.
Right. But with parallel laths, if they were purely independent units just stacked together, you wouldn't have that mirror image balance at all.
So they would drive the local strain energy into this unsustainable, highly unfavorable state.
Exactly. It would be an energy nightmare.
So if the individual slice theory creates a massive thermodynamic headache, Padacia and Edmonds needed a way to prove whether the steel was actually doing something that destructive or if it was acting as a single coordinated loaf.
And the experimental rigor they applied here is incredibly precise.
They had to be, right? Because at this scale, any impurity throws off the physics.
Yeah, they started by using an electroslag refined version of 4340 steel.
Electroslag refining, that's where they pass the metal through a reactive slag to strip out non-metallic inclusions and sulfur, right?
Yep. It ensures the microscopic observations wouldn't be skewed by random debris.
And they were working with a very specific chemistry. I have it here. By weight percentage, the alloy was 0.38 carbon, 0.59 manganese, 2.89 nickel, 0.84 chromium, and 0.60 molybdenum.
Which isn't just a random list of ingredients.
No, the carbon provides the baseline hardness, but that heavy dose of nickel, chromium, and molybdenum, that's what gives 4340 its deep hardenability.
Right. It ensures the steel can form martensite through its entire thickness, not just on the surface, all while retaining enough toughness to avoid brittle fracture.
So that specific chemistry creates a highly controlled environment. But to actually look at the structural transformation, they had to prepare ultra-thin foil specimens.
Extremely thin. They used a twin jet polishing unit.
Which essentially blasts the steel with an electrolyte solution to dissolve it down, right?
Yep.
Until it's just a few hundred angstroms thick.
Yeah, it has to be that thin so they could put it under a 100 kilovolt transmission electron microscope. They fired a beam of electrons completely through the metal to image the internal lattice.
Wow. And when they did that, looking at figure one in the study, they captured the typical lath martensite microstructure.
And the individual lath widths are just minuscule, about 0.25 micrometers.
But the critical observation was at the transformation front, the leading edge of the growing packet, where it's actively expanding into the untransformed parent metal.
Right, the very edge of the loaf, so to speak.
Yeah, and it wasn't a clean, smooth line. It was distinctly jagged.
Completely serrated, just sharp peaks and troughs everywhere.
And the most important detail, the internal boundaries between the individual laths, those slice marks from our bread analogy, they originated exactly at the sharp troughs on that jagged leading edge.
This gave them a geometric map, but they needed chemical proofs to back it up.
To definitively solve the slice versus loaf mystery.
Exactly. So they deployed dark field imaging. By tilting the electron beam, they could isolate specific crystallographic reflections.
They were hunting for retained austenite, right? The original parent metal that hasn't yet transformed into martensite.
Yes. They're basically looking for the untransformed parent matrix.
So if the individual slice theory is correct, and these independent laths are just packing themselves together as they grow, you would logically expect to find tiny pockets of that original parent austenite trapped between the laths.
That's the logical conclusion. And when they turned on the dark field imaging to illuminate the retained austenite, they found films of it exactly where you'd expect if the packet was the primary unit.
Meaning at the overall exterior boundaries of the massive packet.
Exactly. But when they looked inside the packet, between the individual laths...
Let me guess, nothing.
Absolutely zero retained austenite.
The interlath spaces were completely clean. So what does this all mean?
It means it's completely devoid of the parent metal inside. If the laths were independent slices coming together, their chaotic growth would inevitably trap some austenite between them.
The fact that it's completely absent is the definitive proof. It solves the sliced bread mystery.
It really does. The researchers proved that the entire lath packet, the whole loaf, is the fundamental unit of transformation.
The packet itself delineates the unit, and the individual laths inside it aren't independent building blocks. They are just inhomogeneous substructures.
Right, substructures that the larger packet creates to manage its own internal stresses.
So it's a single entity managing its internal reality. But wait, I'm struggling with that conclusion based on the visual evidence.
How so?
Well, if the entire packet is a single unified fundamental unit, basic thermodynamics dictates that it should want a smooth, clean edge as it grows, right? To minimize its surface area.
Generally, yeah.
A jagged edge drastically maximizes surface area, which requires significantly more energy to sustain. So why would the steel voluntarily choose a higher energy jagged shape over a smooth one?
That is exactly the contradiction that makes this so fascinating. And it all comes down to a trade-off between surface area and interface curvature.
Interface curvature.
Yeah. You have to imagine the packet trying to grow as one single smooth giant wedge. A singular smoothly tipped plate of that enormous width would have incredibly high interface curvature. at its leading edge.
Oh, I see. Meaning the bluntness of the tip creates a massive localized stress concentration against the surrounding austenite.
Precisely. In crystallography, a highly curved, singular, blunt interface requires an immense amount of local strain energy to force its way through the parent lattice.
It's just too blunt to push through.
Right. So the metal determines that minimizing surface area isn't worth the catastrophic localized stress of a blunt tip. The material degenerates the shape.
It breaks it down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That singular high-stress tip breaks down into a series of smaller, sharper tips, which is the jagged front you see in Figure 1.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. It's essentially behaving like a serrated bread knife.
Oh, that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah, like if you try to cut a dense loaf of bread with a thick, smooth blade, a single massive wedge, it takes a huge amount of pressure. It compresses the bread, and it's highly unstable.
Right, you just mash the bread.
But if you use a serrated knife, you increase the surface area of the blade, sure, but you break that massive unstable wedge into a series of much smaller, sharper points.
And those serrations distribute the pressure perfectly.
Exactly, locally reducing the force needed to pierce the material.
That analogy holds up perfectly at the microscopic scale. The steel's microstructure is literally serrating its own leading edge to manage the immense pressure and interface curvature of its own transformation.
It's treating the energy cost of higher surface area for the much more critical energy savings of reduced local strain. That is brilliant.
It is. And what's incredible is that this jagged survival tactic isn't just a quirk isolated to Lath-Martensite.
Oh, right. When the researchers zoomed in on the tips of the other variant, the lenticular lens-shaped plates, they saw the exact same mechanism.
Yes. Figure 2 in their paper shows the tips of these plates, and they feature the exact same jagged profile trailing from the troughs.
Which serves as the crucial connecting thread for the entire study.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this specific observation leads directly to Padecia and Edmund's grand unification theory for this steel.
The grand unification theory of martensite, I love that.
Because the jagged fronts behave identically, and because the crystallographic planes align with the parent austenite in the same way, they concluded that lath packets and plate martensite are not entirely different species of transformation.
They are essentially the same thing, just adapting their macroscopic shape.
Exactly. They established that the lath packet is, in reality, just a low aspect ratio plate. They are identical at their core.
But their ultimate shape is dictated by the thermal environment in which they form, right?
Yes. Temperature is the key driver here.
So temperature acts as the invisible hand dictating the final morphology. Let's trace how that works. When the martensite transformation begins at higher temperatures, near the EMS or martensite start temperature, how does that environment favor a lath packet?
Well, at those higher temperatures, the surrounding parent austenite matrix is softer and more pliable.
It's a bit more forgiving.
Right. Because the matrix can yield more easily, it can plastically deform to help mitigate the massive strain energy generated by the martensite transformation.
Ah, so since the strain is easier to accommodate, the steel can afford to grow wider, flatter structures.
Exactly. It can form these low aspect ratio shapes, which are the wide lath packets.
But as the quenching process continues and the temperature drops further into the transformation range, the physical rules of the matrix completely change.
Drastically. As the temperature plummets, the surrounding austenite matrix becomes rigid and unyielding. Plastic deformation is no longer a viable way to accommodate the strain.
The matrix just won't budge anymore.
Right. The strain energy control becomes incredibly stringent. The steel can no longer afford to push a wide, blunt, low aspect ratio shape through that rigid matrix.
It is physically forced to become narrower and sharper to slice through.
Yes. The aspect ratio increases, which visually results in those distinctly lenticular lens-shaped plates.
It's purely an adaptive mechanical response to the rigidity of its environment. And the researchers didn't just theorize this environmental constraint, right? They actually physically proved it.
They did. They manipulated the size of the austenite grains before the martensite even formed.
They engineered the spatial constraints. I think they ran tests comparing small austenite grains to massive ones.
Right. To create the small grains, they heated the steel to 1100 degrees Celsius for just 5 minutes.
Which acts as a structural chokehold. 5 minutes at that temperature is enough to form austenite, but it deliberately starves the grains of the time they need to grow.
Exactly, trapping them at a tiny 100 micrometers wide.
And in that claustrophobic 100 micrometer environment, The martensite plates were forced to nucleate right at the grain boundaries.
Because they were constrained by the boundary wall immediately, they formed a half-lens morphology.
Literally a microscopic lens sheared in half against the grain wall.
Yep. But then, when they changed the heat treatment to 1200 degrees Celsius for a full 130 minutes,
they gave the austenite grains ample time and thermal energy to consume each other and grow massively.
Right, up to 1,100 micrometers wide.
Wow, and in that vast, open, microscopic space, the plates were no longer forced against the walls. They nucleated completely inside the grain. Intragranularly, I think is the term.
It's intragranularly. And without the boundaries choking them off, they formed beautiful, full lenticular shapes.
Which perfectly demonstrates how the macroscopic shape is entirely at the mercy of its spatial and thermal environment.
Absolutely. It adapts to whatever room and temperature it has.
But there is one final critical piece of the puzzle here. We know temperature forces the steel to change its shape from a lathe to a plate to handle the rigid matrix.
Right.
But what happens inside the plate when that shape shifting still isn't enough to absorb the brutal cold temperature drop?
That's where the steel resorts to a microscopic panic button, a process called twinning.
Twinning. That sounds intense.
It is. Twinning is a brilliant last resort accommodation defect.
Like an emergency valve.
Kind of, yeah. When the crystal lattice is under so much deformation strain that it is on the verge of fracturing, it undergoes a highly coordinated internal shear.
Okay.
Instead of tearing apart, the crystal structure literally mirrors itself across a specific internal plane. It creates a twin lattice to instantly absorb and handle the localized distortion.
And the researchers caught this happening in the plate martensite, but with a very specific limitation, right?
But they did. Looking at figure 3 in the paper, they saw twinning, but it didn't extend all the way across the plates.
It only extended partially, and it only involved a single variant of the twin plane.
This raises an important question about the steel's energy budget. Why would the twinning only be partial? Why not a fully twinned plate?
Right, if you're going to hit the panic button, why only push it halfway?
The answer reveals the ruthless efficiency of the transformation. Twinning requires a significant expenditure of energy, and the researchers observed that in the vast majority of cases, adjacent macroscopic martensite plates were already acting as twins to each other.
Oh, going back to what we discussed earlier, where one plate shears left and the adjacent one shears right?
Exactly. They mutually compensate for the strain.
Wow. Because the macroscopic plates were already balancing the strain budget, the interior of the plate completely lost the thermodynamic incentive to nucleate microscopic twins.
Right. The macrostructure handles the stress, so the internal microstructure aborts the twinning process halfway through.
It only spends exactly as much energy as it needs to survive. That is so efficient.
It is. And they also noted that the lathe packets, the high-temperature wide shapes, didn't show this internal twinning at all.
Which perfectly aligns with the temperature constraints we just talked about.
Exactly. Lathe packets form at higher temperatures. In a warmer, more pliable matrix, the metal prefers to accommodate strain by slip.
Which is literally the atomic planes just sliding past each other, right?
Yes. Slip is energetically cheaper than twinning, but it requires thermal mobility. When the steel gets too cold and rigid to slip, it is forced to twin.
So slip deformation is the high temperature luxury, and twinning is the low temperature survival mechanism.
That's a perfect way to summarize it.
And for you listening right now, connecting this back to the macro world, this isn't just metallurgical trivia. This exact microscopic battleground is why you are safe driving across a steel bridge.
Absolutely. This is the foundation of structural engineering.
When aerospace or civil engineers are utilizing AISI 4340 steel for a landing gear or, you know, a highly stressed drive shaft, they are utilizing this exact science. By precisely controlling the cooling rates and the alloy chemistry, they are manipulating these jagged edges.
They are actively deciding whether the steel will form slip-accommodated laths or twin-accommodated plates.
They are dictating the microscopic rules of engagement so that the macroscopic material bends without catastrophically breaking.
It is the ultimate manifestation of macroengineering relying entirely on microscopic energy dissipation. The safety of our infrastructure is literally built on the backs of these serrated shape-shifting crystals.
So to bring this entire investigation home, we've learned that in this workhorse 4340 steel, the historical debate is completely settled.
The sliced bread debate is over.
It is over. The lathe packet is not a random stack of independent slices. It is the true fundamental unit, a single loaf acting as a high temperature, low aspect ratio plate.
And those serrated, jagged transformation fronts, the sheep shifting from flat laths to sharp lenses, the aborted mirroring twins.
It is all one beautifully unified complex dance to manage strain energy.
A physical dance that prevents the steel from tearing itself apart from the inside out.
Exactly. And as we wrap up this deep dive into Padesha and Edmund's work, I want to leave you with a philosophical thought to mull over.
Oh, I like these.
We started by looking at a steel beam as the ultimate symbol of quiet, unyielding solidity. But now we know that solidity is an illusion. What we are actually looking at is a frozen record of violent compromises, jagged boundaries, and desperate energetic battles to survive internal stress.
It really reframes how you see the world.
It does. It invites a broader question. What other solid, unyielding truths in our daily lives, whether in scientific models, in our societal structures, or even in our own minds, are actually just a series of microscopic, jagged compromises when you finally view them up close? Thank you for joining us on this exploration of the invisible world. Stay curious, keep exploring, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.